As part of the Leading Edge Group podcast series, Breaking the Mould, I'm here today at the Royal York Hotel, Toronto, with Dr. Tim Hill, a Canadian and international leader in human resources, human capital, quality and continuous improvement practices. Good morning, Tim. Good to see you again.
Hi, John. Nice to see you.
Tim, your father worked at the Fort Talbotville St. Thomas Manufacturing Facility, and he gave you some valuable insights when you were in your formative years. You might explain to our listeners what these insights were.
I was in the middle of grade two and my father took me to work. And this was at the brand new Ford Talbotville St. Thomas assembly plant. And while I was there, and he told me stories otherwise, there would be visits about twice a year from the Toyota people from Japan. So I learned through the translators about continuous improvement and how continuous improvement, little steps taken every day by everyone, would really transform the work environment.
These insights, Tim, I remember had a profound impact on your career and led to your first visit to Japan.
That's right. So it lent credence to the saying that every day you've got to do better, every day you've got to improve yourself. And then from the sixth grade forward, my father had already passed away. The fellow who was like my second father was a Chinese man from Malaysia who also brought forward this idea, every day improve yourself.
Okay. But how did you get to Japan? Was it that easy back in those days?
No, it wasn't. So I was writing a piece, a research bulletin for the University of Western Ontario called Is It Finally Time to Recognize F.W. Taylor, the Father of Scientific Management? And I pointed out that there was a very strong connection between early Japan and Taylor's writing. And this led to my interest in going to Japan. So I got my letters of introduction written. I saved up my pennies and I paid for my way to go to Japan. So I kind of showed up more or less announced at Toyota's door and said, "Hi, I'm Tim Hill from Canada. Can I learn from you?" That's how it happened.
And that's how it all started.
Yep. And since then, I've worked with car manufacturers, manufacturing, final vehicle assembly, tire manufacturers, replacement window manufacturers. I've been in every factory that Hyundai makes something, from steel to engine to cars to computers and so on.
But you really had a lifelong fascination with Toyota and its production philosophy. You told me you even have a Lexus.
Yes, I'm on my third Lexus.
You're on your third Lexus. So what is that fascination? Can you explain it to our listeners?
And it's not by making large leaps of productivity. It's by making many, many small steps in the same general direction. I'll give you an example. My wife wanted a Barcelona red Toyota Corolla. So I bought her one. And there was two model years between the car she had and this Barcelona red. I counted over 50 improvements in the car itself. I paid less for that car than I did for the car that was 2 years older. And there was more value added. And how Toyota does this is they remove all the cost from production.
Okay.
They lower the customer price, but they increase their profit margin. And that practice, as practiced out throughout the Far East, is one where many simple steps will get you to where you want to go. There's an old Chinese saying, a village can move a mountain a spoonful of dirt at a time.
And this concept of lean, which is really built, the thinking around the production philosophy within Toyota, if you had to describe lean in a sentence, how would you describe it?
Well, first I'll say that lean is an American invention. It came from the machine that changed the world. Two guys who did an MIT study, and they called the Toyota manufacturing system, the Toyota production system, lean. Toyota only ever called it Kaizen. And before the Americans put belts on something, before the Americans called it lean, it was only ever called Kaizen or continuous improvement. And it's these Americans who wrote the book, The Machine That Changed the World, who came up with the House of Lean. We all know Jeffrey Liker's model and so on. But lean is very, very simple and lean is fun. Lean is all about learning to see waste and then reducing and eliminating it by continuous improvement. That's it.
That's it. That's in a nutshell.
Yeah.
You studied, Tim, at the Deming Institute. You studied at the Kaizen Institute Japan. And that's not to mention other Japanese-based quality and engineering institutions. That must have been quite an honor for a non-Japanese citizen to be accepted and indeed receive awards in such a way.
It was. I've received awards. I've received the American Society of Quality Lifetime Achievement Award and so on. One of the people that absolutely fascinated me was Masaki Imai, who wrote the original Kaizen book. And I was in Japan in 1988 when he opened the Japan Kaizen Institute. Okay. In fact, it was from that institute where I was made a lean sensei.
Very, very good. And then, but you ended up then living in the Far East for many years, working across China, South Korea, Japan, Singapore, Malaysia, and Hong Kong, and probably many more. But what were the key differences that you encountered between the working philosophies there and, say, in North America?
The biggest single difference I can think of is that they've embraced this idea of continuous improvement at the cultural level.
Okay.
So it's in the workplace culture, it's in the personal culture, it's in their general business culture. And you can go to corner stores and find business books that deal with Sun Tzu and KFC, that deal with continuous improvement, that deal with Kaizen. And it's not to say that that spirit is not present in North America. It's present about maybe half the time, depending on how they've grown up. Now, if you take Paul Akers and his company, FastCap, on the West Coast, he's hired people who have this lean culture. So they buy it. They get it. They get every day they try to improve themselves. If you're talking about an old paradigm manufacturer like Ford or GM, and GM is the worst of the two, they don't get this idea of many, many small steps in the same general direction. I had a friend who used to work at GM, and he was showing a slide about a bridge cat spanning a big river. They said, Lean's going to do this for them. One big step. He quit that day, and he sent me a copy of that slide.
You also taught industrial and organizational psychology back in the homeland. Where did you get that time, Tim?
In the evening.
Wow.
Yeah. I started off in industrial organizational psychology because I wanted to find the best way to get people into jobs and train them for doing their jobs.
Yes.
And I figured once you selected the best, trained the best, did the human performance management the best, what was then the next best thing that you could do? Well, you could do continuous improvement a la Toyota from the same stories I used to hear in the middle of grade two. And the link between IO psychology and lean is very deep and very intimate because you've talked about management theory, you talked about leadership and so on. And one of the things that John Shook has told us, and he was the first American to be trained in Japan, he ran the NUMMI plant in Fremont, California,
right?
Is he said, to change behavior, you've got to change behavior. You can't just talk to them. And this is why most lean training fails. They just talk to them. So I always tell people you're going to have three groups of people. The people who are right there, good with change, people who sit on the fence, and the people who I call lovingly the cave people, citizens against virtually everything. So you start with the people who get it, and they're going to change. And then they discover the change is good, the change is fortuitous, they're going to do more change. Then you take those history of successes, like the little before and after pictures I shared with you, and then you convince the next wave.
Okay.
And then you use that to convince the third wave, those cave people. Because you can talk to your blue in the face, and you'll never change their mind. If you show them with facts and data, you will change them.
And you've taught and consulted on lean for over 30 years now. What does the future hold for lean? Is it a fad, all but long term, that will eventually die, eventually over time, and be consumed into a new management philosophy? What's your view on that?
No, I don't think so. I think lean, or the tenets of lean, have been around since the 1500s. And we can go to the Venetian shipyards, where they were building a full galleon a day. In fact, the King of France once came up and said, how fast can you build a galleon? They built it in 2 3/4 hours. From nothing to finish. And I've been to Venice. I've seen those Venetian shipyards. There was once a Globe and Mail article where a consultant, and I'm doing air quotes said lean is just a fad. I got so upset, I hammered out a response on my keyboard. I sent it off to the Globe and Mail, and they published it. And I said, it's not a fad. It's been well established for well over 100 years. There have been elements of lean that go back through history. And then to top that off, Toyota's not going anywhere. So we know that it works. And then on top of that, yet again, we've got all these little Toyotas. So we've got the snowblower manufacturer that was the site for Virginia Mason Medical Center, or ThetaCare, right? We've got Virginia Mason Medical Center and the Boeing Lean Aerospace Initiative. So for all these progressive companies that get it and that have had great success with lean, they've all gone to companies that have already had lean successes, if not Toyota themselves. For both Virginia Mason Medical Center and ThetaCare, they're regularly sending people to Japan to do the Toyota tour now.
So what you're saying is lean can apply across all sectors.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Across all functions within right. organizations.
Right. So it can go through a continuous casting process, a continuous anything process. I work with companies that do rubber tires, and they've got a consistent 24/7 foundry operation to melt or smelt the rubber. I've dealt with people that treat water at a municipal level. I've dealt with car manufacturers, general manufacturing, healthcare, mining, and so on and so on. So what I like to tell people, I've done lean in every area in which you can do lean.
Very good. But I suppose can, and people asked me this recently, can lean survive without Toyota?
Yes, absolutely. They can survive because you've got to be able to keep it simple and direct. If you can see waste in any process, then you can tackle it, and that's the spirit of lean. Toyota is leading the way, but if you can do those two things, then you can do lean. That, and we have a whole slew now of Toyota-like companies mm-hmm. to which we can draw from. And I mentioned Paul Akers and his Fast Cap Industries in the American Northwest. He has a two-second lean. He requires everyone to let him know what their two-second lean objective was.
So have Toyota been surpassed?
No.
By organizations that are doing things quicker and better and faster than Toyota?
No. And what most people don't know is that Toyota is embarrassingly large. It's also the number two manufacturer of prefabricated homes. They make heavy industrial equipment, they make moving equipment, they make fork trucks, they make cars, and so on and so on. What they also don't know is that Toyota's research into alternate energies goes back nearly 100 years. Now, during the war, 1945 and thereafter, the government set up the Ministry of Industry, Trade, and Information, which was basically everyone in industry meets once a month and Toyota tells them about the Toyota production system. So that's why we see the TPS in electronics, in manufacturing, in car development, in fact, even in healthcare, but we see it from car development in Japan to car development in Korea. So we could all think of Hyundai's that started off as a little more than a rust bucket, and now Hyundai's winning quality awards in line with Lexus. And the Chinese are looking to Japan and looking to Korea for their object lessons in how to perform lean. And I tell you, the automotive sector in the next 10 years will be led from China.
That's an interesting observation, Tim, for our listeners. But moving it back home, you know, what's the future for manufacturing in Canada and indeed across the Western world?
Well, I used to like to tell people that if we had done continuous improvement, if we had done lean for the past 40 or 50 years, we would not have lost 80% of our manufacturing ability. So we had two things going for us. One is people said, that's the way my dad used to do it, that'll be good enough for me.
Yes.
Which is an absolute opposite of lean. And then we had the American branch plant problem. So most of our factories were, in fact, American branch plants.
Yes.
And we didn't have much say in how they ran. But for the ones that have survived those 40 or 50 years, and the new companies coming up, and now I'm thinking particularly about the entrepreneurs, the people who work with hardware, work with software, and the people who are doing avant-garde manufacturing.
Yes.
They embrace lean, and now we're seeing a bit of a renaissance in lean again.
And Tim, finally, for our final question for our listeners, what is a lean sensei, and how do you achieve that title or honor?
Well, to be honest with you, I more or less fell into that. I'm going to Japan, all throughout the Far East, consulting there and learning there, and then coming back to Canada to practice what I learned. So I could tell you about a vinyl window manufacturer outside of London and one in Japan.
Okay.
And the comparisons between the two. I could tell you about Hoosier Tire in Indiana and Yokohama Tire in Yokohama Prefecture in Japan. So I can make all these comparisons. And this is before we had belts. Like, I like to tell people, I got a black belt, it's holding my trousers up. But I'm also a certified Lean Six Sigma Master black belt. But it was from the Kaizen Institute in Japan shortly after Misaki Imai opened it that I was granted a Lean Sensei status.
Okay, Tim, it's been an honor and privilege to talk to you today. I would like to thank you for giving us your time this morning and for sharing with us your insights into the world of Toyota, the world of Lean and its continuing role in making our businesses fit for purpose. And I hope you continue to deliver and to support your pioneering work for many years to come. Thank you, Tim.
Thank you, Joe. Take care.